Hey everyone, welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here on the main mic. And with me, I have Robbie Denning. We just finished a five-day mule deer hunt in search of a big deer in the high country. And yeah, we just wanted to talk about that.
We are here.
Yes, we are.
Late September.
Yep.
Beautiful weather.
Just packed out.
Sitting at the trailhead.
Yes, we are.
You might hear some cars going by here.
Yep.
They're going to look at us like, what are those people doing on like microphones?
Well, the last 5 days has been super fun. We've been chasing a deer that you call Rock Slide.
Yeah.
And you found him this summer. What was kind of that scouting process to find him?
Well, I've got a hunt partner. His name's Ryan Pimentel. He's from Idaho Falls, where I live. And we've been friends for 20 years, and we've tried to do a few mule deer hunts together and actually pulled it off a couple times. And our last one, unfortunately, was in 2010. And we had found a big deer in the summer, like pushing 200, and just had a great time hunting it. Ryan is kind of a dyed-in-the-wool elk hunter. He's been very successful archery elk hunter. You know, he's taken an Idaho bull over 400. I mean, that's like a unicorn. And just, you know, the kind of guy that fills his archery elk tag every single year. Nice bulls, but he's really got the mule deer bug going the last 10 years. And so we're always trying to do a hunt together. I'd love to be part of his first really big deer. So this year it was looking like a good year for us to go with schedules and points and all that other stuff. You know, the Intermountain West got a really hard winter this year, and that kind of set us back. But I did some spring scouting, talked to some biologists. You know, I volunteered on a few studies that they were doing, and the winter kill was bad. It really was. But kind of what I took away from it was it's not going to get any better now for a couple of years. You know, we've lost our fawn crop of basically we had that 16-17 winter that we had. We lost our fawn crops from 2016. So those are your three-year-old deer right now, okay? And then we turn around and had another bad winter, 18-19. So that means we've lost our 2016 fawns and our 2018 fawns. And talking to the biologists, they're like, it's going to be slim pickings for big deer here coming a couple of years, you know? Probably should hunt while we've still got some, you know, mature deer on the hill. Typically when a bad winter comes, you lose your older age deer and your younger age deer. So your prime age deer, your 2 to 3 year old deer, those typically make it through at a higher rate. So we decided, okay, there's probably, you know, a few of those around, and you know, a 2 year old deer on the winter of 16 would be like he'd have been born in 14. So he'd be a 5 year old deer now, you know. And I've aged a lot of bucks, and 5 year old deer usually go pretty good antlers. So we decided to put in, we drew, it was easy draw. And started the scouting in late July. Ryan actually, he tried to start in early July, but there was just still so much snow in the high country from that winter. And I started scouting some of the low, the unit goes from basically desert to high country. And there's some low density deer herds in the kind of desert foothilly stuff. So I actually went on a few scouting trips in early July, like I think the 12th, 13th, 14th. Snow was all gone. And I don't know, I found like 13 or 14 bucks down there, but just nothing to speak of, you know, everything probably, you know, 2-3 year old deer or something like that. And Ryan got into the high country late July, and then I started in August. And what we decided to do was, you know, there's no sense in two guys really scouting together. You know, where the goal is to find a couple of good bucks, at least one good buck, and then put our efforts on that. So we just decided to spread out, and we didn't make one single scouting trip together. You know, we would just stay in touch during the week, and this is where I'm going, you know, where are you going? And we just slowly started building our buck numbers. And by about the third week of August, we'd actually seen a fair amount of deer. I was pretty happy with deer numbers for what we thought we'd see. I think between us, we were at like 140, 150 bucks, something like that. And, you know, that's over, gosh, we probably had, I think, 15, 20 days between us, you know, 7 to 10 days per person. And talking to some of the guys that know the area better than us, that's actually They said that's about half the number of deer you should see. Jeez. So, but anyways, it is what it is. And but by the third week of August, neither of us had seen a buck that we could honestly say was over 4 years mm-hmm. old. And, you know, it was getting down to the wire. And like, well, we just may be continuing our scouting during the hunt because, you know, we wanted to start bow hunting and the archery season opens in early September. I think it was the 23rd or 24th of August. He probably doesn't want his name mentioned, but Travis Hobbs, he's one of my friends, you know, buck hunter extreme. And, you know, he was trying to help me out and, hey, check here. Did you check there? And I went in and went into a spot that he had recommended and, you know, totally brand new to me, Jordan. I'd never even been there. Mm-hmm. Got there in the afternoon, you know, rode my horse up the canyon, just did a little recon on, you know, is there any glassing points up here? Any places I can be at daylight? Found a few buck tracks in the trail, you know, nothing special. And, the country where the bucks are was only about 4 miles in. So I thought, well, I'm not going to pack in and take a tent and all that stuff. I'll ride from the trailhead the first morning. And if it looks really good, then I'll come back and get my stuff. So that's what I did. And got up on this big 10,500 foot peak at daylight and just started glassing. And I think it was the first deer I saw that morning. Jeez. And this is the 23rd to 24th of August, and he was awesome. He was everything we'd been looking for. And, you know, you and Ryan had asked me when we were hunting if I knew what his score was, and I don't. I mean, I didn't get a super good look at him, and unfortunately, you'll see the phone scope footage. I actually didn't get it on him before he got in the trees, so I didn't have any way to really go back and say, okay, he's this kind of buck. But I know what I saw, and when you look at 100 bucks over the summer, and this the buck is far and above anything that you saw.
Yeah,
you just know he's special. He had a big cheater up on his left side. I could tell that he was about 2.5 miles. I was looking at him through the BTXs, and then I switched over to my 20-50 Saguaro, and you know, I really did get a good look at him. But it just wasn't very long, like 45 seconds to a minute. And he was walking away from me. That can fool you. But he still looked awesome. He looked really heavy. Usually by late August, their velvet's kind of starting to flatten out a little bit so they don't have mm-hmm. that big puffy look that they do in July. So I knew he was a good buck. Big cheater up on the left, at least 4 points per side. He stopped and fed and put his head down. So I'm looking at him from behind, but he's kind of quartering away. And when he dropped his head, I could tell, like, gosh, he's just really tall. I mean, he's got everything. So the season was going to open in 6 days. So I just called mm-hmm. Ryan as soon as I hit the valley and said, hey, I found us a buck. We got to go. Never had been in the area other than just that day. And so, we came in for the archery and came the day before the season, packed in, you know, really just totally new country to us. And ironically, Ryan had, when I showed him where the deer was, he's like, oh my gosh. He goes, I saw deer on that mountain. And he pointed to the mountain he'd been scouting on, which was like 5 miles away. And that's kind of the cool thing about high countries. You can look a long ways away. And he goes, I actually saw some deer over there. He goes, you know, I didn't see anything big or, you know, probably wasn't the same deer, but it was just kind of funny that we were both ended up looking at the same place. So the day before the season, we packed in. And I mean, we had to find water. We had to find a place to camp. I mean, it was all new to us. And, we hunted that whole 7 days. We were in there 8 days, hunted seven, never laid eyes on him.
Yeah.
I mean, just a punch in the gut. But you saw it, Jordan. It's not classic high country, is it?
No, it's out of the, would you really say it's out of the alpine?
Oh, it's not alpine at all. I mean, there's hardly anything to glass.
Yeah, but it's like strips of, it's like strips of timber, clumps mm-hmm. of timber, I guess, and then kind of some open country in between it. But that open country in between it, or in some like the beetle-killed timber,
yes,
grows crazy. I mean, the grass
does.
Is like
there's
knee
feet
height
in there. Yeah, yep, totally.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I think. Maybe people that have that picture perfect mule deer area in their mind, like it might be good in the summer, but as that grass burns off, they got to go somewhere for feed. So if you're looking at an area that really doesn't have grass on it, mm-hmm. but I think you have to realize that it doesn't have grass on it. You right. have to look.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, when Ryan and I started hunting it, you know, we started finding deer. I mean, there was deer in there, but for whatever reason, whether it's the feed with what you just mentioned, with what I agree, you know, I agree with that, as the feed starts to die, the deer move a little bit, or if it's just their natural pattern as they start to rub their antlers, they go into the cover. But that mountain's got a lot of timber on it. I mean, it really does. And I even told Ryan that. I said, you know, we're going on a bow hunt in a place that is not cut out for bow hunting. You know, it's subalpine at best, you know, and bow hunting high country mule deer is best in the alpine country, where you can really use your optics, bed them up, or at least get an idea where they're bedding and go after them. And but you know, we're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. It was the best buck we saw, so we went after him. We had a good time, and the great thing about it, and you probably saw it this week, I mean, we knew every access way to get in there with horses walking, however we wanted to do it, we could get in there. And that's a big part of your hunt too. Like, if you don't have the logistics down, you know, you're just walking into your deer country. You know, you don't know the wind, you don't know how to get in there, you're spooking deer. So it's never a waste to go hunting, but it wasn't like it was unfruitful for that archery season.
Yeah, I think that's why I really tell people to try to go scouting. It's not only to find deer, but try to get some of that logistical stuff down, because like, it took you guys a week or 7 days to get some of that logistical stuff down. Well, most people, that's all I have to hunt, 7 days. So by the time they finally get it and they feel like they can get it, they have to leave.
I know, and I don't know what to tell them. I mean, that's why it's important to try to hunt the same areas every year, because even if you can only hunt that long, at least you can come back and, you know. I mean, just little things like, where do we get water and where do we camp so we're not spooking the deer? I mean, that can take a day or two to kind of figure out, you know. And sometimes you have to move camp because all of a sudden you realize, man, I'm climbing 1,500 feet a day and, you know, half of it's not even deer country. They're not even going to be down here. What am I doing? I need to camp closer. And so we worked all that stuff out. And but you know, it was kind of a bummer to pull out and just know that, gosh, we didn't even see him. But I've you know, and you and I have talked about that a lot this week. And you know, is that buck still around? Is he still up there? I don't know. I've just learned, Jordan, that when you find them, they're there for a reason. And it doesn't do any good to run all over the place. You know, you got to kind of hunt right around where you've seen them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you said. You're like, where are we going to go?
Yeah, because I don't know where to go. If he left, I don't know where it is, yeah. You know, and there's a good chance he'll come back. And so moving up to this hunt, you know, yeah. Ryan and I hunted that archery season, and then that closed. And so they have an early rifle season. So we got right back up here, and that's where we met Jordan. Jordan and I had been planning on this since the spring. And we packed in we arrived at the trailhead, Friday? And it opened 2 days later. So, yeah. And Jordan and I were the first ones at the trailhead. In fact, we were kind of surprised. I thought, man, there's like nobody here. And we had about an hour to ourselves, and man, then it blew up. I mean, horse traders pulling in at 9:30 at night, big diesel pickups, jug, 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 jug. We're over there sitting there trying to have a cup of hot chocolate, coughing, and the other guys are like, hey, we're sorry for all the noise. And there were trucks literally coming in and out of here all night.
Oh, like, yeah. I thought I was going to get hit.
Yeah, Jordan's out here sleeping on a little cot tent behind her truck, and I was in my truck in my camper show. I'm thinking, man, is she okay over there? This is like Grand Central Station. And then Ryan came in that night too, and so, you know, by Saturday morning, I can't remember what was here, 3 horse trailers, mine, that big long one.
2 vehicles. I swear I heard a bike go by.
Yeah, we heard a bicycle go by. I think there was like a pinecone bopper here too. We saw like a little SUV. I think they were out trail running. I mean, we definitely are not in a very remote area as far as, you know, people and everything. And I kind of knew that. I mean, you know, I'd done enough research on this unit and everything that you're not going to be alone. But anyways, we got everything packed up Saturday morning and headed in. We took 3 horses. And we put a saddle pannier on one of them, which basically allows you to carry gear on a saddle. And then we just traded riders. So Jordan walked the first mile, and then I walked a ways, and then Ryan walked a ways. And we just kept doing that till we got in camp. And I figure we're about 5 miles in there. You know, it's an hour and 40 minutes to camp.
Yep.
And we got in there. We had left the tent and everything. I don't leave my tent set up because bears will go in and just tear everything to pieces, or people will steal your stuff. So we got that all set up. And, gosh, had a pretty relaxing day that day, and started glassing that evening, showing Jordan the area a little bit. And I told Jordan before we got up here, I said, just expect to see 10 hunters opening day. I mean, it's just how it is. You know, we're in a basically an OTC unit. It's just how it is. We just got to get in there and mix it up. And I was pleasantly surprised. There were people around. We had heard a lot of shooting opening morning, but you know, we're down out of the Alpine and it seemed like all the shooting was up in the Alpine country,
yeah,
right?
Definitely. And all the horse tracks were going up to the Alpine.
Oh my gosh, that one trail looked like a flipping highway. You know, I had seen that trail the week before when we were in for archery, and it was just, you know, some places it was kind of hard to see where it would go through the grass. Jordan and I saw it last night because we went over from the Alpine and kind of glassed over into the subalpine, and it literally powder. It was ground down to powder, and there were so many horse tracks on it. I mean, there had to be just dozens of people in and out of here this week. But this is what I've kind of noticed on, and this is where, this is why I'm not a big Google Earth guy. I am, but I'm not. I use it to kind of start with, but it's why I get out in the summer and I spend so much time scouting, because the big bucks will tell you where they want to be. Google Earth won't. It'll give you some starting points, but what I've learned about Google Earth is we all end up in the same beautiful alpine country.
Exactly.
Where if I get out and I start scouting for bucks and I see big bucks, even if it's in August, I'm like,
there's deer running.
Oh, we're seeing deer right here from the trailhead. Where are they? Right. Do I need to get the rifle?
No.
Oh, it's babies. Look at those cute little fawns. Ooh, and twins. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love it when I see twins after a hard winter. I know we're going to get through this. Anyways, that's pretty cool. Take note, people. The first podcast where we are actually spotting deer from the truck. They're fawns, but they're future big bucks, I promise you. But anyways, what was I saying?
The people just don't hang into the subalpine.
Oh, that's right. And so by seeing a deer, by laying my eyes on a deer, I don't care if it's August or not, he's given me the biggest clue. I'm at least in part of his home area. And the way I look at these big bucks, you know, it's my opinion only that they live in about a mile, maybe 2 square mile area. That's what I think, you know, before they migrate, before the rut. You know, I'm talking early season like right now. So if I see him, I know, at least I know his home area. Now, I don't know his core area. You know, where is he spending his time when he rubs his antlers and when the pressure's on? I don't know that. You know, that's I know that when I pull the trigger. And so, but that's why scouting's so important. And that's why, well, you just saw, I mean, that was my 12th day in there today. And I'm hunting it as hard as I was the first day because I know he's there. And if he's not, there's a chance he's going to come back. I don't even know if it's a good chance, but there's a chance that's where he's going to show up because he's comfortable with it. And then we're kind of back to the hunter numbers. We never saw anybody right where I've seen.
No. Now,
we did see a guy shoot a nice 170 type buck, very close to the area. In fact, it was one of the areas I thought the big buck might go on opening day. But when I took Jordan out there, I said, you know, any buck out here is going to get freaking killed if they're here very long. But we needed to check, and we went there the second day.
Yep.
And I had seen some horse tracks up on top of the ridge, but I think they were scouters. I think they were in a couple days before us by the edge of the track. And then we saw one boot track. But we never saw any people right where we'd seen the big buck. But over on that backside, we saw he was a real tempter. I mean, I thought about it.
I said, Robbie, are you sure you don't want to shoot him?
Jordan was applying the pressure because it does make for a better film if you shoot a buck. I agree.
And he's still in velvet.
And he was still in velvet. Yeah, that was amazing. All the other bucks are out of velvet. And, you know, he was a nice buck. He probably had 16-inch G2s. You might have got 17 out of him. You know, he was, you know, so he was tall. If you stay tuned and watch the film Jordan releases this winter, there's a little video in there of him. But you know, I've just learned if you shoot bucks like that, you're never going to get a big one.
No.
You know,
yeah,
and I'm sure that guy that shot him, I mean, he's freaking thrilled. He should be.
You know,
that's a 4-year-old deer. That might even be a 5-year-old deer. And but the other thing that was encouraging about that is I had been up here, what, by that day, that was like the 8th, 9th day I'd been here. I'd never seen that buck. And that's the other thing I've learned about hunting these big deer is that even if we don't find rock slide, we got to talk why we named him that.
Yeah.
Even if we don't find him, I've learned this. This is what happened last year on that 34-incher. There's other big deer that will come around that area because if it attracts one, there's a reason. There's enough cover, enough feed, whatever it is, lack of hunting pressure, I don't know, but you'll see other big bucks. And so that's the case in point with that one that guy shot. I mean, Ryan and I never saw that buck.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason we named this buck Rockslide is because as that mountain that Jordan was describing is covered with great big rock slides, and we're talking boulders as big as a pickup, and lots of scree and everything, and plus it's a pretty cool name.
Yeah,
you know, we like rockslide.com. So, but anyways, that's why we started calling him Rockslide, and I found his tracks around those rock slides up there, and you know, they're the kind of rock slides that have a little bit of feed on the edge of them, and like we glassed up deer last night right on the edge of that.
Oh yeah.
And that first day we were in here for the archery season, we saw like 4 bucks feeding down in there. So anyways, that's getting off topic here. And so but that whole mountain, Jordan, hopefully you've seen that the last, you know, 5 days of tromping around on that thing, is that it's got security to it. And even though those horses came in and that guy walked on top, did we ever even see any deer up where those guys were?
No, not at all. And I think, like, I've hunted a couple of places where there's been horse trails and, like, dude riders, you know, mm-hmm. like, have a dude ranch or whatever that ride through it. And then we sit there in the evening and these big bucks come out in the bottom. And I'm just like, they just lay down there and they watch them go by. Like, why mm-hmm. should they jump up and run? Mm-hmm. There's bucks that hold tight that people walk past every year, I'm sure.
You bet that I walk past. And so I guess the tip for that is that, you know, if you're not finding bucks in the alpine country after opening morning, don't be surprised, because if they're 4 or 5 years old, they had to get out of there to survive. You know, like that buck that guy killed, you know, that, remember when we walked out there, I said, oh, that buck's gonna die. He is gonna die. And I didn't even know, you know, if the hunter'd seen him yet or not, but I just thought, oh, you cannot run around in the alpine country with a rack like that in a basically OTC unit. You're gonna get killed. And sure enough, he did. But anyways, but my whole point is that I didn't give up. You know, between Ryan and I, you know, I've spent 12 days in there. He spent 10 between, you know, archery and rifle so far. We will be going back. Got a few more weeks that it's open. I don't have any other way to kill the buck other than be there. I got to be there. And it doesn't sound like positive thinking. I told you this, you know, when we first started talking about it. He'll probably get away. They usually do.
Oh, yeah.
But the few giants that I've killed have been just like this. They disappear. You keep hunting, you keep turning it over, you keep going, and all of a sudden they show up. And, you know, 25% of the time you end up killing them. And so that's why we're still after it and going to keep going. A few high points, though, that of the week. We did get that trail camera in there.
Yeah, the trail camera's in there. So it's here. Mike.
Oh, sorry. The reason I put that trail camera in there, Jordan, I forgot to tell you this. Even though we didn't see this buck during archery, we had one night of rain. It was on the sixth night, I believe, and it had been hot and dry before that. And I told Ryan, you stay down here in glass. I'm going to go hike through that, what we had determined to be some kind of feeding bedding areas, because we'd seen bucks in there. They'd get up, they'd feed, and they'd lay back down. They weren't in a hurry to leave. So I went and hiked through it, and sure enough, cut a giant track. And I was able to track him. I turned my base map on my phone just so I could lay a track down and actually go home and look at it mm-hmm. later. And I tracked him almost a half a mile because it was muddy. It was easy to follow. And he showed me where to put that trail camera. You know, he went right through. That's kind of a little pinch point right there. It's yep. above that rock slide and then kind of below the top where it gets bald. And, you know, sure enough, there's buck tracks on that trail. But his track is awesome. And I've hunted other deer in this range before. And every mountain, I mean, a deer track's a deer track. I get it. But every mountain range has just little different nuances to the tracks. And, you know, most big bucks will look a little bit like a cow elk track. That's definitely what that buck looked like. But I've seen some giant tracks in this mountain, in these mountains, and I've killed a couple of bucks up here that were, you know, over 215, and all of them had tracks just like that one. And I may have even showed you a track from him this week. You know, we saw a couple tracks like that.
Yeah, definitely. And then there was, like, you showed me where you tracked him through, and it had rained again, so mm-hmm. his tracks were all kind of filled in. But mm-hmm. yeah, if it's not him, there's another big deer up there.
And that's a great point. That's what I thought, too, because that's what Ryan was saying, was, do you think it's him? I'm like, well, if it's not, it's another 300-pound deer, and we want to see what's on his head.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, tracks are important. So we put that trail camera in there. Jordan and I put it in there on, like, the third day?
Yeah. I think it was the second day after that buck got killed.
That's right. Yeah, we put it in there the second day. We put it on that buck trail, and then we just left it alone. It snowed on the third day. We had seen some bucks over there kind of by the trail camera. I figured that they would be on it. And then the next day, you know, we're not just sitting down here at camp and then going and checking the trail camera. I mean, it's just part of our whole routine for the day. Jordan and I went in there the next day after that snowstorm, and sure enough, there were those bucks that we had seen. But the cool thing about it, and this is one reason I run trail cameras, is there was a new buck. We hadn't even seen him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in velvet, like a big, heavy, you know, he was a young buck, two point, but, you know, probably 20 inches wide. We'd never seen that buck. And so, you know, I knew the trail cam was working, you know, that we've left it in there. It'll show us if that buck shows up or not. But kind of the high point for me, I had two high points on this hunt. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool seeing that 170 buck. That guy shot.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, just kind of confirm that, hey, yeah, there's big bucks down there and they shouldn't live in the alpine or they're going to get killed. But, you know, you should always check that stuff on opening day. But the other high point was that buck yesterday. I don't know if that was your high point, but that was pretty flipping cool. You want to talk about it?
It was cool. Yeah, so that's another thing, too, is still hunting. Like, you do a lot of that. I've never really done much of it because I just never done it enough. I felt like if I was walking through the woods, I was going to be bumping stuff out, mm-hmm. and then it wouldn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely comes back, like we've talked about. But so we were still hunting and just taking a few. I mean, you just take like 2-3 as quiet a steps as you can, and then you stop and you look and you glass and just see if you can catch any tines. And we were walking through, and you got a little ways ahead of me, and I looked over at like 30 yards. I didn't even know he was that close, but it was like, what, 35 or 33 or
35 in my ELs when I ranged him.
Yep. And I just saw like the deer bedded down, like his back half is all I saw. And then I went up from that because I thought it was you could tell it was a deer. And then I saw like his velvet beam sticking out. And I'm like, oh, there's a deer right there. And so I got your attention and then ended up being that smaller buck. But he like held tight and was, we got it on video. He's turned around looking up at us, but he's looking like over the top of a stump.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. And I mean, he didn't just see us and bolt. He like held tight until he knew
he was gonna let me walk by.
Yeah,
he really was. And if you hadn't seen him, I may have seen him, but I was kind of getting past him because we were what, about 8 yards apart?
Yeah,
I was almost past my field of view from him, but when Jordan got my attention, I heard you whisper or something, and I turned around, mm-hmm. and you said buck, and I thought she meant one had got up and ran, and my hearing's so bad that, I mean, that happens a lot when I'm people, I'm like, oh crap, I didn't even hear it, and then she's still pointing. So
right,
I kind of eased around, and oh man, 35 yards, he's laying down, and from where I was, my perspective, his eyes were blocked by that stump. And,
oh,
you know, it was a blowdown is what it was. And his eye, I could not see his eyes, but I could see his rack. Now, this is like a 24-inch buck. But as I got looking at him, he's all goofy on his bases. He's got one base that's got like 4 points sticking off of it. You know, he's probably a 3-year-old deer. He's not an old deer by any means. But it was pretty cool because how many hours do you think we still hunted the last 5 days? I mean, I know the last two we did 10 hours.
I was going to say
6 or 7 yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say like 14 maybe.
Yeah, I'll bet we did 14, mm-hmm. 15 hours of still hunting. And
that's
still,
a lot.
It's a lot, and it just wears on me. And, you know, and I'm not even recommending it for people. But when you're not seeing the big deer in the opens, I mean, we were up there well before first light every day, weren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we were 1,000 feet up the mountain, you know, headed into those feed areas, you know, three of us, you know, and Ryan's got eyes like an eagle. He doesn't miss anything. And, you know, we didn't all three just hunt together. Jordan and I did because she was doing the filming. But, you know, we would spread out, stay in touch with each other on the radio. So we knew we weren't missing deer. And, you know, after about the second day, I just thought, we're not going to see him out here in these big meadows. You know, we got to get in the cover. And so that's, you know, you notice we didn't still hunt much the first day or two.
Yeah, we didn't.
And then by day three, I'm really still hunting because, and I learned this from an old buck hunter one time. His name was Doug Isabel. And he said that, you know, I'd rather be in the cover where I have a chance at a big buck than out of the cover where there's virtually no chance. And that's a tough pill to swallow, because it's like, wait a minute, but if I just stay up here in these feed areas, these events are going to show up. Maybe not, you know? Yeah. Maybe not. We never saw it. And so that buck yesterday, it doesn't matter that he was a three-year-old buck. That could have been rock slide land right there.
It could have.
We overcame his senses, and he didn't know we were there.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely could have been him. And then after we jumped him up, there was buck beds everywhere in there.
And he just showed us that. And that's the great thing about tracking and still hunting, is they're pretty low odds propositions to kill a big deer. They really are. I have not killed that many still hunting and tracking, but the recon you get by going in the cover and seeing how they use it. Because when Jordan said we jumped the buck up, and we could have killed him 18 times.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, I had the scope on him, you know, the little dot on that vortex on him at 35 yards. I mean, I could count his hairs, and I thought, oh, man, I'd just love to pull the trigger right now. But he finally got up. Jordan got him on video. Watch the film. You'll see it. And so we went down there, and what did we find? Four buck beds there? Four or five?
Four, and then we went a little way, little ways further, I don't know, 50, 60 yards further and found more.
Yep, and there was more. And so and as Jordan and I got looking around, we're like, you know what? This makes sense. It's not heavy, dark dog hair timber. Don't think that. I don't find very many bucks in the thick dog hair timber. They're not elk, but enough cover that that he can hide. But the sun's still getting down through the timber. You know, it's sparse enough that it's growing all that feed. The feed was knee deep in there, and so you know that buck just gave us a clue on here's a place that deer go. Does rock slide go there? I don't know, but I know one thing. Yeah. I'm going to hunt it again. And we did today. We kind of crept through a little higher than that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's full of deer tracks. So hunting is never a waste, even when you don't get them. So if you haven't figured it out yet, Jordan and I spent 5 days in there. The 12th day for me, we haven't seen him. I haven't killed him.
No.
But we've got some good recon on him. We got a few weeks of season left. I was telling Jordan, I think the last 3 weeks, I've been at work 5 days, and so I got to go pay the piper, and got to get back and get caught up. But Ryan and I will hook up again, and we'll figure it out, and we'll get. I'd like to spend another 5 to 7 days in here, and I'd love to hit it when it snows, because when it snows, you know, that obviously increases deer movement, but you know, typically for a day or so you see more activity, but it. The tracking is so much better. You can just figure out where they're going. And I'm not just talking about, I want to track a buck to his bed and kill it. But, you know, that's kind of a unicorn too. You got to have the right conditions and everything for that. But the tracks help me know where to hunt and where to still hunt and where to be glassing at first and last light, you know, that kind of stuff. Camp life, what'd you think of that?
Camp life was super cush.
We stayed in a Seek Outside 8-man tent. We ran their extra large titanium stove. And now Ryan and I packed that tent in for archery and stayed in it. You know, I'm just not one of these guys that can just ham it up in a frickin' pup tent with another guy. You know, wake up in the middle of the night and you're breathing in each other's face. And, you know, you're trying to get out of the tent, take a leak, and you're, you know, cry. I could do that for about 2 days, and I'm ready to, like, gouge my eyes out. So we packed that in there, and, you know, it was just great to be able to spread your gear out, like when it rains. I mean, that's the other thing I hate about pup tents and everything is gosh, when the weather gets bad, I mean, you get tent bound. You're pulling your hair out going, you know, there's no room, everything's wet. So we packed that in. And then when we got Jordan, we went ahead and threw the stove in, and it was pretty warm the first couple of days. We didn't even run it, but once it snowed and then it got cold, we were really glad we had that.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. That was really nice to have in the evenings. But then, like, in the morning, that first morning that we started, I don't even know. Yeah, you started one this morning.
Yeah, I started one this morning, too. Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah.
Once it gets down close to freezing at night, I get up in the morning, I'm going to start a fire. I'm just going to light one. It wakes me up. It gets me motivated to get out of bed. But when it's, you know, just cold and it's just like, okay, I got to get up and I got to get moving, you know, get up and do jumping jacks. Oh, you know, I'm going to hunt about 2 days in those kind of conditions, you know, where when I have a stove, you know, I can get up and, you know, actually, I learned this from Dwight Shue through his old articles. Don't go back there and just survive. Thrive.
Yeah.
Figure out how to thrive. You'll hunt better. You'll hunt longer. And so I felt like, you know, once it got cold like that, that, you know, we were fine. I mean, we got enough gear in there. We'd stay a month and through all kinds of weather conditions. And so you're running a new sleeping pad?
Yeah, I have the Nemo. I don't even remember what it's called. It's the only Nemo that, First Light came out with a Nemo collection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's their pad. It's called the Longbow. And it's kind of tapered at the bottom, mm-hmm. sort of like a mummy, mm-hmm. you know, a pad for a mummy bag, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's wider.
Mm-hmm.
And I got along great with it.
Yeah. It seemed like a really nice pad. And it, for those of you that have not seen the new pump bags that they make, there's several companies that are making them now. I slept on the XPED pad. And a pump bag is just basically, think of a 30-gallon trash bag. And you just open it up and fill it full of air. You can blow in it if you want, but you know, it's literally got an opening on it the size of a trash bag.
Yeah.
And you know, if I get a good gust of wind, I can just fill mine up. And mine took 2.5 pumps to fill it up, and I didn't have good wind. I don't know how many yours took.
It took more. Your pad is bigger, but your pump bag is way bigger.
My pump bag's bigger too. Yeah,
my pump pads or pump bag isn't very big at all. And the way they do theirs is it's not really the wind. It's kind of, you're supposed to keep your mouth like 6 inches from it or something.
Oh, gotcha.
And blow into it.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure why they do it that way, but
gotcha. Yeah. But they're pretty awesome. You know, I've ran lightweight cots before, but you know, they're even lightweight cots to like 5 pounds, you know, you'd never use it for backpacking, and even for horsepacking, it's hard. But that XPED, that served me well. I almost like sleeping on my mattress at home. So.
Yeah, that looked really nice. Back to the deer, just real quick. Some of your bigger deer, were they just like this? I mean, you kind of scouted them up, but then mm-hmm. you didn't see them mm-hmm. for quite a while
exactly.
before you shot them?
Yeah, that 234 buck I told you that I killed in Idaho years back, I found him on the 7th of August, and Idaho archery opens August 30th, and I started hunting him August 30th, and I did like 7 or 8 days for archery, almost just a mirror image of what we just did, and then the rifle opened that year, October 5th, and I won't get off on a tangent here, but there was another 37 incher that I had found in some foothill country that kind of lured me away, and I went up mm-hmm. and I hunted him that first 9 days. Somebody else ended up killing him. So I got back on that mountain where that 234 buck was like the 15th of October, and I hunted 6 more days. So altogether, I hunted 14 days. I never saw him until the second I killed him. And
jeez.
I killed him within 800 yards of where I seen him. And then that 224 Wyoming buck that I killed in 05, same thing, found him in the summer, hunted archery, and actually saw him during archery. I actually got a stalk on him, got within 40 mm-hmm. yards. He was a fairly visible buck. He was living kind of right at the subalpine level and didn't really come out in the alpine, but he was a little more glassable. You could see him every 2 or 3 days. And ended up killing him during the rifle, and but I still had 16 days into him, and I think in that 16 days I'd seen him like 3 times, something like that, maybe 4 times. And there's a couple more. You and I were talking about it back there. I mean, that 36 inch Idaho buck was, you know, I found him 2 days before the season, you know, and didn't see him for again, and then until I killed him. I mean, there's been others. I lose track of them, but there's been a whole bunch that's got away. I mean, there's been a bunch that are like, I did the same thing that we're doing right now, and I don't know what happened to them. Maybe they do leave. Maybe some leave, maybe some don't. I don't know. I really don't know. And that's, to me, that's the lure of big deer, because, you know, there is nothing more, and I, you know, I'm not counting like your wedding day and the birth of your children. You know, I'm not talking about that, but there is nothing kind of more fulfilling than finding a great big deer that you have virtually written off. All the hunters are gone. You know, nobody's hunting him anymore. All the naysayers say they're gone, and bam, there he is. And out of those 3 or 4 that you and I were talking about back there, Jordan, I've killed them all within 0.5 mile of where I've seen them months earlier, you know? And so anyways, he'll probably get away, but I know one thing. I'm gonna keep hunting until it closes.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, I don't know where there's another big deer.
Exactly. Where else are you going to go?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, to kill big deer, I think you got to do that. And you got to know what you want. Like, if you just come, you know, if you're coming from wherever, you just want to kill like a big mule deer, like, it's a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're probably not going to be in the picture perfect basin.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're talking early season deer before the migration.
Yeah.
you know, before the migration.
Sure.
Exactly. You know, there's a whole different podcast when you get past the migration and rut and everything like that. We're talking early season deer that you can scout and then you can hunt before they migrate. Mm-hmm. If they're 5 or 6 years old, which it's going to take to get fantastic antlers, they're not going to be in the open.
No.
I don't know. I don't know if they just have magic tricks and they have a calendar. I have no idea, mm-hmm. you know, but they just disappear. But, you know, again, I'm not going to kill him if I just start jumping around the unit. I'm not going to kill him. I'm better off just to stay here. And plus for me, you should have noticed I didn't really slow down. I was hunting the same day 5 as I was day 1 because I'm pumped. I know he's right here.
Yeah.
I just got to get a break and catch him, you know, and where once I start jumping around, all the mental games begin. Like, well, I wonder how many people have been in here and wonder what got shot out of here opening day. And gosh, I wonder if there's even a big buck here this year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where at least if I'm hunting where I've seen one, I got all the recon I need, you know?
Yeah. For a second, when we snuck up on that deer yesterday, when I saw the back half of him, mm-hmm. I thought, like, we got him. Like, just for a second, I was like, Robbie.
I know. And, you know, and part of that is I did too. Believe me, when I saw those, because he was pretty tall. I saw those tines sticking up behind that stump. And then I saw that goofy base. Because remember, I didn't get a super good look at Rockslide. You know, I know he's got junk. I just don't know how much. Yeah, there was about a quarter of a second too. I thought, oh man, we got him. But part of that was because I'm not just wandering the woods. I'm like, we are right here. I mean, this is 500 yards down the hill from where I saw him in August. And this is thick cover. This is where I would expect to see him. Yeah, I thought we had him too, you know. But that's kind of why that was a high point to the hunt to me, because it just reminded me that just keep doing all the right stuff and it could work out, you know. And but if you give up, I've done it, believe me, I've given up, I've driven home
me
and
too.
Forget it, and then you think, well, you know what, at least when I was there I still had a chance. I got no chance once I give up.
Yeah, and I thought about that as soon as we got back to the trailhead. I was like, kind of eats at you.
Yeah.
Like, you know he's laying up there chewing his cud somewhere.
Yep, there's a 95% better chance or better chance that he's alive. He didn't get... I used to think all this stuff. Oh, he probably got shot and I didn't know it. Or a lion got him or he got sick. I mean, I used to think... No, those big bucks, they're survivors. They live. They live. And there's most of them do not get killed. It's kind of a truism in mule deer hunting that most big deer die of old age. You might not think that looking at Instagram, but no, most big deer die of old age. I still believe that. They die on the winter range.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I learned about Robbie this trip was his sense of direction is a little off sometimes.
Oh, you can go into it if you want, but I might turn the mic off here.
No, just the high point from the whole thing is last night we're walking back to camp and we think we know where the trail is. And like, Robbie's really going. Like, he's like,
I move
on a line and all of a sudden he turns around and he goes, nothing looks familiar.
That's how I roll. And Ryan was teasing me because I don't have that good of a sense of direction for all, you know, spending 30 years in the mountains. But like I told Ryan, hey, I know where camp is and I know where the truck is. And sometimes I know where there's a big buck. That's all that counts. But yeah, anything in between, like how many days did we ride that trail in the dark? And every morning I'm still asking Jordan, is it that tree or is it that tree that we turn out? The best way to explain it, there's a jet engine going in my mind every day. There's a million things going through my head. And I always think I have good directions until I go with somebody that does. And then I'm like, oh, frick, I waste a lot of time wandering around, you know? But yeah, nothing looks familiar. That's the takeaway from this, huh? And when I looked around, I'm like, and you know, it turned out we'd been right on that hillside like an hour and a half before. But Jordan, it looked like the moon to me. I mean, I've never been here before.
So, that was pretty good.
Well, good deal. Did you have fun?
Yeah, I had a blast.
All right.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. Even when you don't get one, it's fun, isn't it?
Well, I think you have to make it fun and keep in high spirits because when you don't see a deer for however long you've been in here, you gotta have fun. You gotta be there to enjoy more than just the...
It's got to be more than the kill,
or
it gets old really fast. Because, you know, that's hard hunting. I think the latest we got up was 4:07 a.m. And a lot of days that alarm clock went off at 3:45. And to be clear with people, I don't know if we talked about this or not. I don't think so. But I don't hunt all flipping day.
No.
I really don't. I hunt while the hunting's good. I think that we were quitting usually around 2-3 o'clock right around there. I think one day we hunted until 4. And part of that is just the logistics of being in country like this. I mean, these horses got to eat every day. Yeah. It takes about 3 hours a day to feed a horse. And, you know, evenings are okay. And if I'm close to the bucks, I'll definitely hunt them in the evenings, yeah. but I don't kill myself to hunt them in the evenings. And last night we went out in the evening and you noticed this morning, we were a little stuck in first gear when we got up. And
I was.
So I totally, people will laugh at me. My friends tease me sometimes, but hunting all day, I only hunt all day when it's worth hunting all day because it wears on you.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not fresh and you're sleeping in a little bit each morning, and, you know, sleeping in to me is not sleeping in till 10 a.m. Sleeping in to me is getting to your glassing point or the feed areas 15 minutes late. Because you saw that, Jordan, opening day, that first nice 4-point we saw, that 160 buck, he was headed out of there well before sunrise, right?
Oh,
I mean, we could barely see him in our binoculars. Yeah, and you notice that in those feeders, that those little bit nicer bucks, that one that we saw in the snowstorm, they are on the edges of the cover at first light.
Yeah.
And so that's what I learned, is like, if I'm just pounding it every day and just, you know, I'm out till the very last light, and then every day I get up a little bit later and a little bit later, I think that hurts me more than skipping a few evenings just to make sure I'm sharp, I'm ready to go, I'm well rested. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that can just, 4 hours of sleep, no problem, I'll hunt my ass off. No, I'm the kind of guy, I get 4 hours of sleep, frick, I'm dead asleep at 10 a.m. missing all the best glassing, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And we saw a lot of deer between, you know, 9 and 2.
Yeah, we did. Leave. We really did.
Yep. Yeah, you just glass up bucks that keep rebedding.
Yep,
and like you were talking about, a buck will have like 3 or 4 beds, you think, until around 1 or 2 when they have kind of their bed for the rest of the day.
Yep, that's what I think. You know, I've never seen a big buck just lay down in the morning and stay in that bed all day. I've seen them do it during the rut, but they're tired. They've been running does all night. They're tired. I've seen them stay in their bed 6-7 hours. But no, this time of year, if I see a buck up in the morning, they'll bed down. Usually it's not even in that much cover. Then they'll get up and feed again and, you know, move 15 yards. And then usually when it starts, like on the, it's different per day. Like when it's warm, then about 10 a.m., they're really trying to get out of the sun. And so they're hitting that second or third bed, and often you don't see them again after that. You know, they're going into the cover, like where we saw that buck yesterday that we walked up on. But that one day, you notice we had the snowstorm, that nice, that probably the second nicest deer in here. He's about, 165, 4-point. He's probably a 4-year-old deer. He's got a big body. You notice that when he got out of his bed. Flip, he was bedded right on the edge of that feed area at 2:30 in the afternoon. We got him on video, and I don't think he'd been there all day. I think he got up and moved. Yeah. And so, you know, that buck may have been in his fourth bed for the day, you know? Mm-hmm. And this time of year, they're trying to put on the weight before the winter. You know, the grass is still, the feed is still good, the forbs are still good. And I think if we left them alone, if we totally left them alone, and I've seen this in draw units, they're right up in that alpine country, they're feeding almost all day long. You know, they'll lay down for 3 hours at a time and chew their cud, but they get right back up and feed. And I think, you know, that area's got a lot of beetle kill timber, and there's a lot of forbs and herbs in the trees, that those bucks are still feeding them during the day. We just can't see in there.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going on almost an hour, 45 minutes. I want a burrito.
I am so flipping ready for anything like that. You know, that we stopped at a Mexican food place, just a fast food joint on the way up, and I had a taco salad, which really doesn't sound that appetizing. But I'll tell you what, when I was riding out today, I thought I would give anything for that taco salad right now. I may even go over to that little pump they have with all the fry sauce, and I may even just put fry sauce on my taco salad. Yeah, that's the stuff you start thinking when you're in the backcountry. Oh, tell people about your inReach. I know a lot of people know about them, but this is the first time I had really got to experience what an inReach can do.
Yeah, so an inReach, Garmin makes it. It's a Garmin inReach. There's a few different models of them now, but I have the Explorer Plus, and basically what it does is it's a satellite messenger. So instead of having a satellite phone that, you know, I haven't been around one too much, but I know, you know, you'll call somebody and they're super expensive, and then you might cut out after, 2 minutes into telling somebody maybe something you really need them to know. So this is a text messenger. It's a two-way messenger. So, you know, I was sending messages to Jordan. We sent a message to your wife. Mm-hmm. We were teasing Ryan ever since he got out.
Yep. He was teasing us. Yeah, he was eating more prime like rib last night.
Yeah, that was probably a mistake on our part. And they can text us back.
Yeah.
So, I could, like, whatever. Just like Ryan's deal. Like, we just said, hey, this is what happened this morning. And he said, cool, I'm eating prime rib right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Making fun of us. But it's great to know that if there was something wrong.
Yeah.
And really the biggest thing I worry about, I mean, I got three little kids. I got a great stay-at-home wife. I worry about them. What if there was something wrong that they, I mean, you know, she can take care of most things. But, you know, I've got the Spot one-way messenger, so I can let her know I'm okay.
Yeah.
But I can't get anything from her. And so watching you with that InReach, of course, you know, we're on Rockslide all the time. I knew what they were. Yeah. But now that I've seen one, that totally justifies the $400 or $500 investment, you know, just for peace of mind, stuff like that. So for those of you that are out there that may have been on the fence, Jordan just sold me on those for sure.
It's super, they're super nice. That two-way communication, because like, how is somebody going to find us?
Yeah, exactly.
Most people don't even know where we are.
Well, and that's the thing. Like my Spot Messenger, they can find us. Yeah. I'm sending those waypoints every single day to my wife. But again, what if there's like just something we need to know? What if there's a car wreck? What if somebody's on their freaking deathbed? Yeah. Man, this is the last time you can see them. Man, I don't want to be back here hunting deer. You know, and then I'm just thinking from like kind of like a business standpoint. There's a few things. I mean, I don't come back here to work. I don't want to. But, you know, sometimes my boss needs me, and it's just a quick little thing, you know, just one little thing. And honestly, it buys me more days off, you know, if I take care of that thing rather than get back and, oh gosh, this blew up while I was gone. Geez, sorry, you know. And the other thing with this area, there is no cell reception.
Yeah, there's no
cell. I have
cell
climbed
reception.
Onto these 10,000 foot peaks, and I have not been able to get cell reception.
Yeah.
So huge.
Yeah, yeah, it's really nice because I worry about more what's happening out there than what's happening in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Just exactly. Like
yeah, we
you
know
said.
What's happening in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and especially when you're doing a lot of hunts, it's really nice.
Yeah,
to
good deal, good deal. So awesome, Jordan. Cool. Hey, you did a great job. You were a flipping trooper.
Thanks,
yeah, I mean,
man.
You amaze me for a young lady how you just get around these mountains and you're so comfortable with them. And I can tell you spent a long time in them. And I'll tell you what, people, you're gonna hear more from Jordan. But
cool, thanks, Robbie.
You bet.
I see.